Okay, so get this. Imagine like a whole network of loan companies, right, secretly working together to bribe a government official, all to keep interest rates high on those small loans. This isn't some like fictional thriller or something. It's a real case, Commonwealth v. Beneficial Finance Co.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about it is that it really like changed how we think about corporate crime, especially how far criminal liability can actually reach within a company.
So it wasn't just like one rogue employee going crazy,
Right.
right? This involved multiple companies, like allegedly conspiring to bribe a government official all to, keep those profits coming in, right? This case is huge for understanding how much legal responsibility a corporation actually has for what its employees do.
Absolutely. This case involved three major players in the small loan industry. This was back in the 1970s in Massachusetts: Beneficial Finance, Household Finance, and Liberty Loan. And they all wanted to keep interest rates at a hefty 12%. And you want to know their method? You got it. Bribery. Targeting Martin J. Hanley, he was the supervisor of loan agencies, the very person in charge of regulating them.
So they were trying to bribe the person who was supposed to be keeping them in check? That's pretty bold. And this wasn't just like a one-time thing either, right?
No. We're talking about a whole web of alleged bribes going all the way back to 1957, culminating in a big push during those 1962 rate board hearings.
Now, here's where it gets interesting to me. The masterminds behind this scheme weren't the CEOs you might expect, right?
Right.
It was mid-level managers and even like PR reps allegedly calling the shots.
Exactly. They weren't at the very top, but they had enough power in their departments to pull off something, massive. And this case really highlights how actions, low down the ladder can have these huge ripple effects throughout a company.
So how do you even prove that a whole company is guilty of a crime when it's not the top dogs running the show? That just seems incredibly difficult.
Well, it all comes down to showing that, those individuals were acting on behalf of the corporation and that the corporation was actually benefiting from their, shady dealings. Think meeting minutes with coded language, suspiciously timed financial transactions, and, witness testimony connecting all the dots.
They were using coded language in meetings? That's like straight out of a spy movie.
Exactly. And the court in Commonwealth v. Beneficial had to, like, sift through all of that to determine if these actions could be linked back to the companies themselves.
Okay, so they're building a case, but what was the court's final verdict? Did they buy it?
They did, and they didn't just convict the individuals, they held the companies criminally responsible, and that's what makes Commonwealth v. Beneficial so important. The court basically said that corporations can be held liable for their employees' crimes even if they didn't directly authorize those actions, a landmark ruling.
So if I'm understanding this right, a company can be held responsible for what its employees do, even if the higher-ups didn't explicitly say, like, go break the law. That seems like it has huge implications for corporate accountability.
You're exactly right. And that's what we're going to unpack in more detail. The key takeaway here is that if an employee has enough control over their part of the business and they're acting even implicitly to benefit the company itself can be on the hook. And that's a game changer.
Okay, that's a lot to absorb. So we've got these loan companies, a bribery scheme, and a landmark ruling that expands corporate liability. Where do we go from here?
Now that we understand the players in the crime, we need to dive into the court's reasoning. How did they connect the dots? How did they justify holding the entire corporation liable? That's where things get really fascinating.
All right, law students, buckle up. We're about to go deep into the legal weeds. Okay, so we laid out the basics of Commonwealth v. Beneficial, right? A bunch of loan companies trying to pull a fast one on regulators, this bribery scheme with like coded language and secret deals and, a landmark legal decision. But how did the court actually get to that decision? How did they prove that like an entire company could be held responsible for what their employees were doing?
Well, the court's decision in Commonwealth v. Beneficial, it's like a legal textbook on corporate criminal liability. It's really fascinating stuff.
Okay, Professor, break it down for us. What were the key steps the court took?
Well, first, they had to establish that the individuals involved, those mid-level managers and PR folks, were actually guilty of conspiring to bribe Hanley, right? You can't hold a company responsible if its employees didn't actually do anything wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense. You need to prove that the employees committed a crime before you can even talk about, like, whether the company is also liable.
Right. And the court really went deep on the evidence. They analyzed meeting minutes, sometimes with this coded language that hinted at bribery schemes, financial records that showed, like, suspicious payments made right around the time of favorable regulatory decisions. And they even had testimony from people who were involved. You know, it's a thorough investigation.
So it wasn't just like one piece of evidence. It was a whole bunch of clues that pointed to this coordinated effort to bribe Hanley.
Precisely. The court really had to, like, meticulously connect the dots to show that these weren't just isolated incidents or some rogue employees acting on their own, right? These individuals, they were acting in a coordinated way, and their actions were all part of a bigger plan.
Okay, so they established the individual liability, but then how did they go about proving that the companies themselves should be held responsible? That seems like the trickiest part.
That's where Commonwealth v. Beneficial really becomes groundbreaking. The court basically laid out this framework for how to determine corporate criminal liability.
A framework. So they weren't just making a judgment on this one case. They were establishing rules that could apply to future cases as well.
Yeah, exactly. And this framework, it's still cited in cases today. They created a test to determine when a corporation could be held criminally liable for the actions of its employees.
Okay, so what was this test? How do they decide, like, when a company crosses the line?
One of the most important factors was the concept of authority. The court made it really clear that authority, it isn't always about having, you know, a fancy title.
So it's not just about being the CEO or a high-ranking executive or something.
Exactly. It's more about, like, the actual control and influence that someone has within their area of responsibility.
So in this case, even though these were, you know, mid-level managers and PR people, they had enough control over their specific departments that they could actually influence the company's dealings with Hanley.
That's right. Think of it like if you're the captain of a ship, right? You're responsible for what happens on that ship, even if you're not personally steering it every second of the day, right? You have authority over the crew and the overall operation. It's similar in a corporation.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So the court was recognizing that even people who aren't at the very top can still have a huge impact on a company's actions.
Exactly. They said if an employee has enough operational control over a specific part of the business, and they're acting to benefit the company, even if it's not explicitly authorized by, you know, the CEO or the board, the company can still be held liable for those actions.
Wow. So companies can't just hide behind the excuse of, we didn't know what our employees were doing anymore. They have to be, like, much more proactive in making sure their employees are acting ethically and legally, right?
Precisely. Commonwealth v. Beneficial really raised the bar when it came to corporate accountability.
This must have, like, sent shockwaves through the corporate world. It seems like it would create a lot of anxiety for companies, you know, worried about what their employees might be up to.
It definitely did. This case really forced companies to reevaluate their internal controls, their compliance programs, and just, you know, their whole approach to ethical conduct. Suddenly, it wasn't enough to just have a code of conduct. They had to create a real culture of compliance.
Okay, so we've got this concept of authority. Was there anything else in this framework for corporate liability?
Yeah, the court also considered the relationship between parent companies and their subsidiaries. Mm. Remember, some of the loan companies in this case were subsidiaries of larger corporations.
Oh, right. So even though they're, like, technically separate entities, there's often a lot of control and influence between a parent company and its subsidiaries.
Exactly. And the court wasn't going to let parent companies off the hook easily. They used what's called the principle of agency to hold parent companies accountable for what their subsidiaries were doing.
Wait, principle of agency?
Yeah.
Can you, like, break that down for us, non-legal folks?
Sure. Basically, it means that if there's a close enough relationship between a parent company and its subsidiary, if the parent company has a lot of control over the subsidiary's operations, then the parent company can be held responsible for what the subsidiary does.
So they're basically saying you can't just create a bunch of subsidiaries and then pretend you have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The court recognized that these corporate structures can sometimes be used to shield companies from liability. But in Commonwealth v. Beneficial, they said, nope, not going to work here.
That's pretty powerful. So I've got the concept of authority, the principle of agency, and what else? How did they, like, bring all this together into a workable test?
Well, the court essentially created a three-part test. First, did the employee have control over, you know, the relevant operations of the business? Second, was it the corporation, through its organizational structure, that put the employee in that position of authority? And third, was the criminal act committed in furtherance of the corporation's business interests?
So it's not enough to just show that an employee did something wrong. You have to prove that it was connected to their role in the company and that it was at least in some way like intended to benefit the company.
Exactly. And this three-part test, it's really become a cornerstone of corporate criminal law. It gives courts, a clear way to analyze these complex cases and determine when a corporation, not just an individual, should be held accountable.
This is all like incredibly fascinating. It's like a whole new level of legal strategy.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about how a company's structure and what its employees do can create this liability for the entire organization.
Absolutely. And to really drive home their point, the court used a very interesting analogy involving political contributions.
Political contributions.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with, bribery and corporate crime?
Well, they basically said, look, even if a corporation's board of directors didn't specifically authorize political contributions, if those contributions were made by employees who had the authority to do so, and if they were like intended to benefit the company in some way, the corporation could still be held liable.
So they're drawing a parallel between, these seemingly legitimate activities like political contributions and an illegal act like bribery.
Exactly. They were trying to show that this principle of corporate liability applies broadly. It's not just about, explicitly illegal acts. It's about any action taken by an employee that benefits the company and falls within their scope of authority.
This is where Commonwealth v. Beneficial gets really thought-provoking. They're forcing us to think about those gray areas of corporate responsibility. It's not always black and white.
Right. And they even acknowledge, that in the real world of business, things aren't always so clear-cut. There's a lot of implicit understanding, a lot of unwritten rules, and they weren't going to let corporations hide behind legal technicalities to escape responsibility.
Yeah, I'm starting to see why this case is considered so significant. It's not just about punishing, few bad actors. It's about creating a system where corporations are really held accountable for what their employees do.
Precisely. And that's a crucial concept for anyone studying law, especially corporate law.
All right, law students, we just took a deep dive into the legal reasoning behind Commonwealth v. Beneficial. But this case didn't just impact, a few loan companies back in the 1970s. Its impact is still felt today.
Oh, you're absolutely right. The ripple effects of Commonwealth v. Beneficial have been felt throughout the legal landscape. It's shaped how we think about corporate responsibility for decades.
So what happened next? How did the corporate world react to this landmark decision? So we've got this groundbreaking legal decision, right, saying that companies can be held responsible for what their employees do, even if they didn't like directly tell them to do it. So how did the corporate world react to this? Did it send companies like scrambling to change their ways?
Absolutely. Commonwealth v. Beneficial was a huge wake-up call for corporations, especially in Massachusetts. It set a really high bar for corporate criminal liability, like one of the broadest standards in the country.
So companies doing business in Massachusetts had to really step up their game when it came to compliance.
You got it. This case sent a really clear message that the state was serious about, holding corporations accountable, not just individuals. It was a real game changer for corporate culture.
But its impact went way beyond Massachusetts, right? This case has been cited in like countless other legal battles, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Commonwealth v. Beneficial really had ripple effects across the legal landscape, both in state and federal courts. It helped shape how we think about corporate criminal liability nationwide.
It's like this one case triggered a seismic shift in how we view corporate responsibility.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Companies couldn't just, bury their heads in the sand anymore. They had to take a hard look at their internal controls, their ethics policies, and their compliance programs.
Because suddenly the stakes were a lot higher, right? It wasn't
Yeah.
just about protecting their reputation. It was about maybe facing criminal charges.
Exactly. Commonwealth v. Beneficial forced companies to create a real culture of compliance where employees at all levels understood, that their actions could have real consequences.
And this case is still so relevant today, wouldn't you say? Especially in a world with these like massive tech companies and all the scandals we've seen with, data privacy and antitrust issues and who knows what else.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Commonwealth v. Beneficial really provides a legal framework for holding even the biggest corporations accountable. It reminds us that, power can be decentralized, decisions are made at all levels of a company, and corporations really need to be proactive in monitoring what's going on.
And it's not just about avoiding criminal charges, is it? It's about fostering an ethical culture where everyone understands that their actions have real consequences, you know, for everyone.
Exactly. It's about building a corporate environment where doing the right thing isn't just a slogan, it's really ingrained in how the company operates.
So for all our future lawyers out there, this case is a must study, right? It's a masterclass in understanding like the real world implications of corporate power, the nuances of criminal liability, and the responsibility that comes with, you know, being part of a corporation.
I couldn't agree more. Commonwealth v. Beneficial reminds us that corporate law isn't just about, you know, mergers and acquisitions. It's about making sure businesses act ethically and responsibly and that individuals within those companies are held accountable for what they do.
All right, well, that wraps up our deep dive into this fascinating and, you know, incredibly influential case. We've covered a lot of ground, from a bribery scheme in the loan industry to this landmark legal decision that changed how we think about corporate responsibility.
And as you continue your legal studies, remember to always ask those tough questions. Who holds the power? What are the ethical implications of their decisions? And how can we make sure that justice is served, you know, both for individuals and for society as a whole?
Those are questions worth thinking about. Commonwealth v. Beneficial Finance Co. It really shows us how important it is to hold corporations accountable for their actions. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.